listeners to contribute to keep it on the air. Every bit of help during this last stretch of the year helps. Maybe you want to get that year-end tax deduction, or maybe you want to give someone a gift membership to KPFT, or one of our fantastic t-shirts, mugs, or exclusive CD sets. Don't wait until the end of December. Give now at kpft.org. Thanks.
You're listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Greetings and welcome, Technology Bites fans, enemies, minions, celestial objects, inanimate objects, and others.
Welcome to Technology Bites.
I feel excluded.
Is that where we are tonight?
I'm not sure, but welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Lee.
Oh, and yeah, sorry, ooh, jumped the gun. So used to you not being here.
Perfect show. Perfect
show. Groove House.
Yeah. Well, I was so stunned by Pete actually being there. We're deploying new technology, so we found a new and interesting way to have things go horribly awry.
Awesome.
But so far, there he is. So, yeah, no Pete, tell us about the new technology that we have deployed in your honor.
Well, basically, we've got a machine that's dedicated to taking the feed from me and handing back the sound from the board, and it's right on the main subnet for the station, so all right. It's before everything else, and so it doesn't get caught up in any kind of issues with Wi-Fi routers and all that fun stuff. So, is there a difference in how I sound, or does it sound like the normal calls?
No, it sounds better.
It sounds better, I think.
A little tiny bit, no echo.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, hopefully, I'm sure the dogs will test it out later. And then I'm also going to look at sort of improving the surroundings on my side, since it's a lot more likely to be heard.
Oil your door hinges.
Help. Actually, your children and the dog.
Put the dog so downstairs.
I can tell you from also doing the home office thing and occasionally having to do media appearances from the house, the best place to go and do your any kind of microphone work or anything, if you don't have a studio, is to
a master closet.
Go into your closet. That's right. So get back in the closet and then talk to us from there.
Well, the plus side for me is in my house, my desk is actually on the opposite side of the wall from the master closet. So all I really have to do is punch through an Ethernet drop. And, you know, because that's what the well-dressed geek needs in your closet is your own Ethernet drop.
Of course.
I'm surprised you don't have one already.
Yeah. We all have one.
I'll catch up. Somehow.
I see what you Jay's mean. Already caught up.
Oh, no, it was not a catch-up joke.
It is now.
It sure was.
But it became one.
Careful when you drop the Ethernet in the closet.
Is that a euphemism I'm not getting?
No.
All right, well, we're glad you could tune in. Really glad. Really glad.
Really, really glad.
So glad. And if you want to learn more about Technology Bites, you can go to geekradio.com. I had a... What?
Are we still doing that?
Yes, we are.
All year.
So I was noticing that we were having a problem with our podcast feed to iTunes. So there was some issues with playing the... You could download the podcast, but you couldn't play it without doubt. You couldn't stream it through iTunes, which was weird because it used to work. And it was stopped working for a couple of episodes, and it was working for one episode. Then I looked in iTunes, and one show had a one-minute runtime. And it was very weird, but I disabled...
Perfect show.
I disabled some plugins, some security plugins, opened up some giant holes in the website so that the feed could get out. So here's hoping everything's fine.
Now, let's announce it to the world, too. So everyone, come on in.
Come on. You know, I will just tell you that the username for the website is not Technology Bytes, so stop it already.
Are people actually coming in and trying to
they come in, and some people do their homework. You know, I've seen people try to log in as me and log in as different members of the show, and, you know, there's some stuff going on.
I'm
going
to hack it right now.
I dare you.
You have a password. That's hacking, not technically hacking. That's called logging in.
I don't think I have a login. I've never logged into the thing before.
We should set you up. Maybe you'll write something for us. Can we just scrape some Ars Technica stuff?
I already talk for free. I don't write for free.
You already got paid for it. If you're you know, it's not like
we also need to add his Twitter feed to the front page.
Hey, I'll write for free.
Will you?
There you go.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm really worried now. Anyway, geekradio.com, that's the website. Completely hackable. Enjoy yourselves. And
we make backups. Right, Pete?
Pretty much, yeah.
There we go. We pretty much make backups.
You know, it's pretty much an ethereal thing. It's, if you're not listening to us in real time, if you're going back and paying attention to that old stuff. I mean, what does Geek Radio have? It has a record of every geek gathering invitation ever published, and
the photos are pretty cool. Those are back up, right? Galleries are working.
Yeah, I wish that I had. They are back up. They are working, as far as I know.
You should put 2FA on there. I can show you how to do it. There's a really easy 2-factor authentication plugin
for WordPress.
For I wasn't going to say our CMS, so we could have obscurity. Well, through obscurity.
We're still using Joomla.
You know, I see there's maybe going to be a thing about that Pete might talk about a little later.
I believe ours is custom, so it's not going to fall prey to any off-the-shelf attacks. Is that correct, Pete? Isn't it the site on your CMS?
No.
Oh, never mind.
It's completely vulnerable. The password is 123, but you'll never guess the username.
4 or 5.
And, also IRC. We hang out on the IRC, irc.cuckoo.com.
Cuckoo.
That's, I said irc.cuckoo.com.
Cuckoo.
Merry cuckoo. When you move to Flick, this group house has moved to the control center.
And his
voice drops down a few registers.
Yeah. Flick is not here, and things are going on.
It's my show now.
I got, like, the news coming up. I got to make sure that I can push the right button. You know,
just now and realized that you were in the command seat.
I'm in the hot seat.
Yeah.
What does he normally do?
Just, he hasn't been doing much of anything.
I've been here a year, and I'm still not entirely sure.
His job pretty much is to say cuckoo,
snark,
and groove house, and every once in a while,
and to be the one who uses Windows until Barrett got his Surface. Yeah.
He's kind of stage mom. Also, he kind of herds us and makes sure we're doing what we're supposed to be doing, and comes in and drops gentle reminders when we're really messing things up.
I guess.
Gentle.
You're doing it wrong.
So, all right. So, yeah, irc.cuckoo.com and the channel Tech Bytes. We hang out there. And you can join right up or go to our website. And we've got some really secure Java where you can use the Java client to hang out on the IRC.
Hey, we're not keeping all this insecurity just for us. Lack of security for us. We'll offer it up to you, too.
And
delicious plugins.
Yes. So,
is the account named Tech Byte?
Not anymore.
With a
three on the end.
And a five, Tech Bytes. Right.
No, you know, because it's like old school Unix. You know, you don't have more than 8 characters. It couldn't be Tech Bytes. It could be Tech Bits.
Or TB.
Tech Byte.
Well, the password does have camel case.
The password is camel case?
In camel case. It's a blend of camel case and leet.
But the secret is we did it camel case, but wrong.
But it's got to be like God, sex, love.
Password. But not necessarily in that order.
My favorite password is root.
Those are the ones from Hackers. Mm-hmm. Right. God, sex, love. I think there was a fourth one, but I
thought
it was.
They said password, and they said, but not necessarily in that order. I thought that was a direct quote. Maybe it's not.
Hack the Gibson.
Hack the IMDb quote.
I'm just thinking those are all really short passwords. Like, I don't remember
there's not a lot
ever being able to use passwords that short. Even before the movie Hackers came out.
Even when password for root was root?
Password for root was never root. It was tour. It was root backwards. That was
although didn't a space agency? Someone just got hacked a few days ago, and in the latest dump of all the passwords, there were a ton of 3-letter passwords. Some of them like the initials of the agency, or some of them like 3 numbers. Really, really bad. And the person that did it, they said they were just poking around looking for fun, and then saw how bad these were, and their state agency, and just decided to dump them.
That's bad practice.
Dumping passwords, just having 3-letter passwords.
Having 3-letter passwords. You shouldn't do that.
Yeah, has anyone tried NSA is like to log in? All whenever they go to the movies, all those movie hackers, that's what they're putting in. They're typing in NSA, NSA. Oh, we're in.
Oh, but the trick is that it's in lowercase, not uppercase.
Right. Oh, sneaky. I would have typed lowercase first.
NSA 1.
All right, we just enabled a whole legion of hackers now. Don't NSA hack 1. The NSA.
Well, tonight's news has a hack that is even dumber than any of the things we've listed so far. So there's something for people to look forward to.
I can't wait.
All right. Well, so let's do this then. So we are now going to go and see what the Technology Bytes info shot sounds like over the new technology.
Woohoo!
Now, does the new technology enable you to play your own bumpers?
I didn't set up for that tonight, but I planned to in going forward.
Way too convenient.
Since I didn't hook Peter
I can
in,
do it if you want.
I'm just
since,
curious.
Since I didn't hook Peter in, I don't have my computer hooked up to the board now, so I can't play him directly off my computer straight into the board.
It would be a CD eventually.
Give me a second.
But do you have the CD? You could do that.
I don't have the news. I don't have the news bumper.
The news bumper should be on the CD because it's still the
news?
Old news.
Right. I'll have the other bumpers I have, and I can play them. We'll try
All right,
that.
Also right there. Take it away, InfoShot.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to try this one and see what... I don't know what it's going to do. We'll see.
It's the Technology Bytes InfoShot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
So we lead off with a few hacking stories. One that you may have heard Barrett kind of allude to earlier, the Joomla hack. That one we mentioned last week. Well, now there are active exploits out there and going. So if you are running Joomla, if you're running any version of Joomla 1.5 through 3.4.5, a patch is out and you need to use it. Let's see, security researchers found found that attackers are actively exploiting a critical remote command execution vulnerability that has plagued the Joomla content management system for almost 8 years. Today, December 14th, was when the quote was taken. The wave of attacks is even bigger, with basically every site and honeypot we have being attacked. That means that probably every other Joomla site out there is being targeted as well. If you want to look up, there's some things you can look for that will give you an idea that you've likely been hit. It's not worth reading them out loud. If you go to geekradio.com, there's links to all the articles for the show. You can even read ahead if you really want to jump ahead. The deal is Joomla 1.5 was released in January 2008, and that's where the bug showed up, and it makes the bug almost 8 years old. Version 3.4 was released earlier this year. It's not yet clear exactly what happens to vulnerable systems that are exploited, but essentially they use they put a payload in it's tied into the cookie system and they add a payload that then will give them remote command execution. So if you're running Joomla somewhere, take a good close look at it and make sure you ain't been hacksawed. And then, no, I'm not yet to the, like, really stupidest hacking thing ever, that the fact that it works. I mean, you can look leet using it, but it's kind of wow. No, this one, remember last year people got their Xboxes and PlayStations and Lizard Squad hacked, tried to, you know, worked its way into the history of the internet by taking down Xbox Live and the PlayStation Network at Christmas time. Yeah, well, they're not doing it this year. Apparently that's passé, except there's a new group that wants to do it. A new group unoriginally named Phantom Squad is now threatening to carry out similar attacks as well. According to their Twitter timeline, the hackers seem to have launched a distributed denial of service attack against Reddit yesterday, even if nobody noticed its effects. Maybe that's the phantom part. Of course, a behemoth like Reddit is hard to take down in its entirety, but it was enough to attract people's attention to their cause. They've also been claiming they carried out DDoS attacks against Steam and servers for games such as Star Wars The Old Republic, Grand Theft Auto V, Call of Duty Black Ops 3, Call of Duty Black Ops 2. The group has not provided any kind of proof for their attacks, and a quick Twitter search does not reveal any serious downtime in those services. Smaller, probably test attacks were also launched against Xbox Live and the PlayStation networks, and a few of those did result in short downtimes. As for Phantom Squad themselves, they say they only have 5 members and no previous affiliation with Lizard Squad. So right now they look like a pathetic copycat just trying to get attention. But if you remember last year, Lizard Squad wasn't really viewed as a real threat either, except when it was kind of too late. So if you're getting a PlayStation or an Xbox for Christmas and you have trouble with Xbox Live and that, then at least you'll know who to cuss, who to blame. Okay, and now the much-promised lame hack of the week. You know, people, when you've seen somebody who doesn't know what to do with a computer when they hit the same key like over and over again and hope that maybe this time it'll work, you know, the system's frozen, they hit the return key or whatever. This is a Linux bug. 2 security researchers in Spain recently uncovered a strange bug that will let you into most Linux machines just by hitting the backspace key 28 times. There is a fix for it, but the researchers, Hector Marco and Ismail Ripoll from the cybersecurity group at Polytechnic University of Valencia, found that it's possible to bypass all security of a locked down Linux machine by exploiting a bug in the Grub2 bootloader. Essentially hitting backspace 28 times when the machine asks for your username accesses the Grub rescue shell, and once there, you can access the computer's data or install malware. Fortunately, Marco and Ripoll have made an emergency patch to fix the Grub2 vulnerability. Ubuntu, Red Hat, and Debian have all issued patches to fix it as well. Linux is often thought of as a fairly secure operating system, but it is a good reminder to take physical security just as seriously as network security. You know, essentially, a machine that people can touch is a machine that people can hack. If they can, if people can get physical access to the machine, that takes a lot of that opens up a lot of windows. And no, that's not a pun. It opens up a lot of ways that they can affect your machine and hack it, which they don't get access to coming in remotely. So yeah. So imagine hitting the backspace. You wonder who stumbled across that one, or did they like notice that that was the deal? Cause hitting the backspace key 28 times, I guess if you had a really long username that you misspelled, and so you just kept hitting the backspace key, then you'd stumble across it. And now a weird number, you get the weird number patterns in like movies and stuff where, you know, usually Nicolas Cage has psychic powers or has a kid with psychic powers, something like that, or the number pi or whatever. The Guardian had an interesting article about the odd ratio that keeps seeming to show up in technology. And the ratio is 90:9:1. And it's the ratio of the key players in major technologies now. Operating systems, browsers, and search engines all have this ratio of 90:9:1 between the key players. One player dominates, then everybody else gets a minimal share. Say mobile operating systems. This week, Mozilla Foundation pulled the plug on Firefox OS, which was the mobile OS which would have replaced native apps with HTML-based apps. That's a final death throw in the mobile OS wars. There are now three main platforms, Google's Android, Apple's iOS, and Microsoft's Windows Phone, for which worldwide shipments are currently running in a ratio of about, this one's not, it's not 90:9:1, but it's close. It's 85:14:1. Then look at desktop operating systems. In the most recent quarter, Microsoft Windows, Mac OS 10, and self-build machines, which will probably get Linux, 91 Microsoft, 8 Mac OS 10, and 1% self-build. It's kind of like the 1% rule, the rule of thumb observed back as far back as 2006, which states that if you have a group of 100 people interacting online, then 1 will generate some content, 9 will provide feedback, and 90 will simply consume it. Or there's the 80-20 rule, but that's not so much technology-oriented. In the PC and smartphone worlds, the 90:9:1 ratio has each time come about after a sort of Cambrian explosion in the early stages. This is from The Guardian. That's why it's the cool references. As different players rush to capitalize and try to be dominant, you know, if you remember, there's all these think of all the operating systems that are gone and all the mobile operating systems that are gone. Then look at search engines. In Europe, Google gets 90% of all desktop searches. Microsoft gets 7.3%. And Yahoo brings up the rear with 3.5%, and then 1.2% goes to other. And it just keeps going. So it's not clear why the ratio hasn't why that ratio has come about. There's two places that it doesn't happen. One is game consoles. In the Nintendo Wii versus PlayStation 3 versus Xbox 360 had almost an equal split. The current generation continues to deviate from the rule. And then the other place where that ratio doesn't hold is social networks, mostly because you can be on a number of them at the same time. You don't use just one. You don't have to choose between one and the other. Lots of people use Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and Snapchat and all kinds of other ones. So it should be interesting to see how this is how this plays out. But it's certainly the only thing I would point out is, for instance, in the mobile phone space where Google is dominant by number of installs, the money is at Apple. So Apple is making most of the profits in the, on the number side, it goes the other way where Apple's making the majority of the profits and Google is not. So I don't know how long that can hold up, or You know, if the 90% comes from that being virtually free or what. But it was just interesting to see the pattern play out like that because it does seem to happen over and over again. Probably similar with like office software too, like, you know, the Microsoft Office suite. And now on the now we've got a few different we've got a bad police state thing, and then a good police state thing, and then we'll round up with an old idiot. You remember the Cybersecurity Information Sharing Act in October when the Senate passed it, which left intact portions of the law they say make it more amenable to surveillance than actual security. This doesn't have a good intro to this article. Essentially, right now in the House, they're passing they're working on the omnibus spending bill, which is a big chunk of legislation that deals with much of the federal government's funding. And the thing about it is the Cybersecurity Information Sharing Act was supposed to, had been defeated, and now it has been included back into the giant spending bill, which means two things. One is it's not going to get debated about its surveillance friendly provisions. And it also is unlikely to get vetoed by the White House, because that would just mean shutting down the government for only that and not getting any of the rest of the stuff. The latest version, of course, since it's hidden and since it only was stumbled across, it was sneaked in, in the night kind of thing. It actually chips away even further at the remaining personal information protections that privacy advocates had fought for in the version of the bill that passed the Senate. According to Robin Green, policy counsel for the Open Technology Institute, they took a bad bill and made it worse. Basically, the CISA, alarmed the privacy community by giving companies the ability to share cybersecurity information with federal agencies, including the NSA, quote, notwithstanding any other provision of law, unquote. That means the information sharing channel ostensibly created to respond quickly to hacks and breaches could also provide a loophole in privacy laws that would enable intelligence and law enforcement surveillance without a warrant. The latest version of the bill seems to exacerbate the problem. It creates the ability for the president to set up, quote, portals, unquote, for agencies like the FBI and the Office of Director of National Intelligence, so that companies hand information directly to law enforcement and intelligence agencies instead of to the Department of Homeland Security. It also changes when information shared for cybersecurity reasons can be used for law enforcement investigations. The earlier bill had only allowed that back channel use of the data for law enforcement in cases of imminent threats, while the new bill just requires a specific threat, potentially allowing the search of the data for any specific terms regardless of timeliness. Senator Ron Wyden spoke out against the changes to the bill in a press statement. Senator Richard Burr, who had introduced the earlier version of the bill, didn't immediately respond to a request for comment. I found this at Wired. The Senate says the bill was already likely on its way to become law. The White House expressed its support for the bill in August, despite its threat to veto similar legislation in the past. But including it in the omnibus package may make it even more likely to be signed into law in its current form, because any no vote in the House or veto by the president would threaten the entire budget of the federal government. The consultant Green quoted earlier said they're kind of pulling a Patriot Act. They've got this bill that's kicked around for years and been too controversial to pass, so they've seen an opportunity to shove it through without debate, and they're taking that opportunity. So hooray for Congress working in the middle of the night, putting soft surveillance legislation into spending bills. Isn't that a treat? But to make you feel a little better, this one, when you read the headline, you might feel like, oh, maybe this is an overreach on people's rights. Police are putting GPS trackers in every object you can imagine. And the story, it's from mike.com, MIC.com. the interesting part of this story, it's not a reduction of your civil liberties. What it is it's a new way of policing. You've heard of bait cars, where they take a car that's really popular to steal. The police do, rig it with GPS trackers, and then put them places where they'll be stolen, and then they can follow the thief to his house or to a chop shop, and go in and arrest everybody. Well, now they've taken that and gone much farther using the latest GPS trackers. Police have transformed a range of coveted objects, purses, bikes, boxes of Air Jordans, UPS packages sitting on porches, bottles of prescription drugs, anything someone might want to steal into trackable objects. A Dallas Police Sergeant James Johnson was first started playing around with bait cars when he was doing auto theft cases, and now he formed his own company to call the Operational Technology Unit, or as part of the Operational Technology Unit, to begin building bait devices. His first year, there were 195 arrests from it. This year, his goal was 250, and it's actually gone up to 371 so far. This is using it. The only people affected are people who are committing crimes. So there's a clever and smart law enforcement use of technology that makes sense and is going, it hopefully will help reduce crime. So there's a lot more to the article. It doesn't sound like anybody's complaining about this. It sounds like the ACLU says that the way that they're using it is a civil liberties problem. So that's good. So we'll see what happens with that. But I think that's clever. It's a good way to take things that are getting stolen frequently and making it a lot more difficult for people to get away with it. And finally, in the old politicians who don't understand them's the internet, if you watched the Republican presidential debate last night, or even if you did, you might have heard about this. Donald Trump, the front-running Republican candidate, to be the Republican nominee for president, suggested last night that we need to take away the internet from terrorists. Trump tempered the remark by saying the U.S. should shut down the web in ISIS-controlled Syria and Iraq, but it's still, that just turning off part of the internet it's a set of tubes and that you can go and crank the internet will turn off in those places, but it is what our future leadership, the people who are vying to be our leaders, think that we can turn off the internet and that we can cut populations out, and that it somehow would be a surgical thing to just remove only certain countries and so on. I think he should ask China about how that's going with the Great Firewall of China, or even the Iranians, because they've intentionally kept themselves off the internet. And that is the news.
I think Trump was actually trying to keep you off the internet. We were losing you for a second or two.
Oh, really? A little in and out?
Yeah. A little bit of the in and out, yep.
Although,
too bad.
With the country that's small, though, I bet there aren't that many lines in and out where you could cut that. The issues would be cellular communication, which you could probably maintain, but satellite would be really tough to block.
Yeah, well, and
it well, does, he did you know, say we're going to hire the smart people. He said he didn't claim to be the one that was going to be able to pull that switch, but he knew people he could. He's probably got Bill Gates' phone number.
With China is they filter, joke. But I think I didn't see anything. But I mean, if you wanted to deny a country internet access, you just cut the lines and you just take it down and you jam the airwaves, against
the
satellite.
The problem with that though is, yes, you could. I guess you could potentially take a country offline that way. But if you're talking about terrorists and people who have are trying to plan evil things, all they have to do is put whatever files or whatever communications they want on a thumb drive, and a guy on a scooter can ride into another country, go to the nearest internet cafe, and wow, we stopped him, right? You know, we just made it really inconvenient.
Well, you'd also have to cut him off from all countries, right?
Banned scooters, I mean, I think is what he's saying. Yeah, see, we got to get a bigger handle on
this. That'll be next, is you'll have to have your Trump-approved scooter.
And only terrorists will ride scooters. Which is kind of how it is now, I think.
I'm just going to say, I'm pretty sure that's already the case.
I don't know. I've seen some Russian-made military hardware coming around in the Montrose occasionally. Paramilitary-type gear. But yes, isn't it great when our politicians show how much they understand how technology works and how... I mean, that sounds like the kind of the old man yelling at the TV set, well, we'll just take their internet away.
Honestly,
Trump
being a businessman, he sounds like the kind of CEO, the kind of executive who is really rude to his IT people. And so, you know, there's lots of reasons why just cut off the internet for terrorists won't work. Errata Rob, who is a security researcher with a blog, wrote kind of a very technically oriented rebuttal on why you can't do it. And he gets into talking about BGP and how routers work. And I was reading this and I was reading this big explanation of how, like, you just can't section off, you know, Syria or whatever. You just can't do it. And I was imagining, like, Trump reading it and him just being like, this is all just a bunch of nerd garbage. You nerds could do this if you wanted to. Now quit screwing around and shut off Syria's internet and quit wasting my time with all this technical mumbo-jumbo. He seems like he'd be that kind of CEO.
No, I
know what
would.
I'm talking about because I know Bill Gates, so that makes me smart by osmosis.
I made my fortune, and I owned all my real estate without having to know what a router was, and... You nerds need to just quit screwing around.
Well, actually, believe it or not, in November of 2012, all the Syrian internet was pretty much, they were disconnected. The internet was shut down for them because three undersea cables were cut, it looks like, by possibly some rebels. So that's what I mean. There aren't that many ins and outs to the country. We could block, and I'm not sticking up for Trump here, but I'm saying you could deny a country access to the rest of the internet. Filtering's different,
sure.
But cut their lines.
But you'd have to have a single country in mind.
Yeah, I was going to say, how fortunate.
You'd have to have access to those cables to cut them.
How fortunate that the entire, all of the terrorists in the world have formed the nation of Terroristania.
Yeah.
With geographic borders and internet stuff that we can so neatly isolate.
They've all agreed to just stay where inside the borders that they started so that we can all know.
Right.
Stay away from 61.14. That's the terrorist IP block.
Terrorist block.
They have a whole class B to themselves.
Class B.
He's solving the wrong problem, but technically you could do it. He's just solving the wrong problem. That's all.
He wants to build a giant firewall, and he's going to have the Syrians are going to pay for building this giant firewall. It's going to be huge. It's going to have a gold Trump on the side
yes.
of it.
Although there's a bunch of geeks that are going to have to register themselves with the government before the end of the year.
That's right.
Do you guys know about this?
I do.
So more or less, FAA came out and said, look, you're flying a drone and it weighs over 0.55 pounds, you are an aviator. Madam or sir, and you must register just like small planes do with the government. So it's not that much. It's a mandatory $5 fee to get a drone license, and then you can apply that to multiple drones. I think the license is good for 3 years. And more or less, if you fly the drone, you have to, more or less like a tail number on a plane, you've got to affix identification to the drone. That way, if it goes down or hits something or they find it, they can track it back to you. Or they shoot out of the sky, they can track it back down to you.
Pull it out of the engine of a 737.
So, so the thing is, if you get, I think it's after December 21st, if you purchase a drone, you cannot fly it outside until you're actually licensed and have your markings affixed to the drone. And that's a half pound's not very much. Like, I think the parrot drones,
the penalties
are pretty big.
Stiff.
Well, you're looking at it's a federal offense. They're going to make a federal case out of it, quote-unquote, you know? You don't want to mess around with this. This is pretty serious.
I think I remember reading it was like a $25,000 potential fine if you fly unregistered. It was like a big deal. It was not like a little, you know, slap your hand, make sure to not do that. It was like, you are in trouble now.
It's pretty big. So the deal is if you bought anything before December 25th, you have until February 19th to register them with the government. And I think that the first 30 days of the program, they're waiving the $5 fee. But after that, it's $5. So
yeah, you know the $5.
I saw in New Zealand.
No bikes, no drones.
No bikes, no drones.
That's funny.
Well, the $5 fee is the same whether you're registering a half-ounce drone or a, 747. So go big. If you're going to register a drone, pay for it.
Although I have to believe, the universal no, I can't show it to you on the radio, obviously, but when I was in New Zealand, there was a sign at the glacier, at Franz Josef Glacier. Basically, you get to the hiking trail that's going to lead you to the glacier. And there's a sign that says no bicycle. He's got a bicyclist with a no sign through it. And then a drone with a camera attached, no, with a no sign through it. I just wonder that's great advertising for Phantom.
Yeah, that is very clearly a DJI drone.
It's a DJI drone, so they have become the de facto, universal
symbol. It's like the bad boy drone image. Yeah, maybe that's what they want.
Well, and they're so cheap. I mean, DJI just did. They've got a whole new line out. I mean, not to plug for them or anything, but I mean, you could get their the new ones that they just put out with the 1080p like 3-axis gyro stabilized camera that takes amazing images. It was like $600-$700. I mean, this is like not in thousands of dollar territory.
They used to be that kind of thing.
They did used to be, absolutely. I mean, just even a couple of years ago.
Pete was saying go big. Just like I mentioned before, this is the same kind of tail license registration you've got to do with the FAA. So it's the same as if you own a 787.
There was some talk about actually having to be
licensed
to have a pilot's license.
Yeah. I think we're going to go that way. In Geek Gathering's past, we've actually brought out something called like ADS-B scope, and what that does is it listens for ADS-B. I guess radio signals from aircraft, and it reports like, "Hey, I'm this aircraft. Here's my tail number that's registered that someone paid $5 for the next 3 years." And it says like, "Hey, here's my longitude. Here's my latitude. Here's my altitude. Here's my airspeed." All this really important stuff that allows that plane not to crash into other planes in the sky. So anyway, all the Boeing 787s have been blacklisted for using ADS-B. And right now, it's Canada and Australia. U.S. says, "Hey, come on, fly away. It's fine," because they're misreporting where they are in the sky.
Really?
Yeah. So it means a few things. That means they can no longer fly, I think, over like 30,000 feet in airspace in Australia or in Canada and a few other things. Somewhere else, Boeing is working furiously to push out a firmware patch to fix this. But it's one of those things where, some little wrong line of code somewhere has grounded, an entire fleet, or at least as far as airspace goes in two large countries.
And that's wild.
The tough part with that, that I sort of, if I could think of it just in hearing you discussing the issue where they're misreporting where they are, is then does that mean if you built a sort of drone missile that you could tell it to use the ADB information from some plane and the plane would keep reporting where it was right until you could crash whatever into it?
And not to I don't think we have many people listening, much less a lot of terrorists, but some of the dangers in the ADS-B stuff is that it's unencrypted. It was a lot of that standard came out before software-defined radios came out. So you could actually put up a drone and beacon that drone as being like a 787 Dreamliner, and no one would really know the difference. Now, radar being so probably so like, hey.
It's time to play absolute heck with FlightAware.
Yeah. All right, get Dan Baker on the phone. Get Daniel
on
the phone.
When is FlightAware going to start giving me the ability to track drones?
Soon. Well, I guess if they're registered. Who knows?
Now, there's another side to this, too. For decades and decades, there's been a very vibrant model aircraft, radio-controlled aircraft community.
And they fought very hard and, lobbied very hard for airspace things and for getting licensing and being able to do that.
Well, it's been a big deal because the hobbyist, when we're saying drone, the word drone gets thrown around a lot. And typically, drone in this context applies to like these quadcopters that have GPS built into them that have some limited
self-flight assisted
ability.
Is more what it is. Pure UAV.
I've messed with a few of them before. On some of the newer ones, you can actually program in a track and hit the go button and it'll go fly a track and come back to you. But for the most part, they use their GPS stuff. Like if they lose signal or if, you fly too far out of range, they automatically know how to fly up to about 100 feet and then come back home and then slowly descend and land. But there's been this massive surge over the past, probably since about 2011, 2012, of these GPS-assisted quadcopter drones, and it's overwhelmed what has been for decades a very, you know, pretty much
Thanks
stable...
Thanks for ruining it for everyone, guys.
Yeah, pretty much a stable radio-controlled aircraft community. You know, I'm sure there's a bunch of flying clubs in Houston. There are for any major city. And for the most part, they've been... Because the barriers to entry have been high. You want to buy and fly a radio-controlled aircraft, a radio-controlled helicopter... You know, you're in the hall for thousands of dollars.
Just the radio alone costs more than the drone you mentioned
yeah,
earlier.
Yeah, and you've got to go out and
A
you know,
radio, one radio.
You want to learn how to fly it right, so you get in with a club, and it's sort of a self-regulating.
You're
going to
crash a few. You put in your time. You know, you can't do it in city limits where people are flying it. You've got to be way outside. So I think you know, one of the nearest airfields is down Clear Lake, you know, around NASA. Mm-hmm.
And there is no, and now you go, you know, pay your $800, you get this... You know, auto-stabilizing will stay upright and stable even in strong winds. It's got GPS assistant, you know, basically flying computer thing that any idiot like me, who has no flying experience whatsoever, can fly without
any problems.
Didn't you
crash an idiot-proof one?
I did crash the first one, but they fixed it, and I did not crash the other two that I tried out. But, I mean, that's kind of the thing, is after, you know, 60 seconds of fiddling around, you pretty much can fly one. It's just been this huge influx, and it's destabilized what's been for decades a very stable community, and now we've got mandatory registration.
Yeah, how it used to work is a newbie would get it, they would fly it for about 10 seconds, it would crash, and then they'd be done. But now, just like, you know, Lee said, it'll stale off long enough for them to, you know, put it across the White House or crash into a building or hit a small child or just do something silly with it.
I mean, you know, you can crank it into a tree, but for most part, when you go out and spend your grand on one of these newer, you know, GPS-assisted drones, it'll keep within, you know, about a 6 foot by 6 foot by 6 foot cube, no matter what, whether it's, you know, in hurricane force winds or whatever, it'll sit there and stay upright, and you can, you know, crank the sticks around and like try to, if you fly into a tree, it's going to crash. But for the most part, you got to try really hard to wreck these new things.
So the AMA came out. The AMA is the Academy of Model Aeronautics. So they're the ones that have been representing, I guess, for like the past 30 or 40 years, the modeling and, you know, radio controlled crowd. They said that they're disappointed with the new rule, more or less. No one's happy about it.
And well, it's kind of like,
you think it makes it more real, though, when you make your big, you know, your huge, I don't know if you've seen when they do the, like, there's the, like, bomber radio control ones that are, you know, they're scale, but when it's a scale, you know, B-52 or I guess they're the prop-driven stuff, you know, a scale old, you know, World War II prop-driven
like
bomber.
Like a B-17 or something, I've seen those ones.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's like 1/16 scale or 1/12 scale.
They have newer ones that have turbofans. I mean, these are like, you know, little miniature high-bypass turbofans. When you're at that level, you're talking, for like the B-52 one that where the video of it was all over the place, that's you're in for $30,000, $40,000 worth of model aircraft at that point.
You'd figure putting $5 in to have it with an official tail number and all that kind of stuff wouldn't be that.
I mean, they've got rules out there but they've never made everyone register before. It's just, you know, it's just something else that you've got to do. Everyone's always respected the rules. It was always kind of self-regulated, but because so many people are messing it up,
everyone's having to register. It's like the eternal September, but for like model aircraft instead of for the internet. We're in the eternal September of drones now. It's September forever.
Well, that ties into the other thing that seems to have caught on with people is people that don't do action things like, you know, like surfing or, you know, skiing down the side of a mountain, carrying GoPros around and basically video selfieing themselves.
Eating it.
Everywhere. No,
well,
no,
the,
no.
The cool stuff is coming out. Have you seen the self-tracking drones now that are out? That are kind of neat. So more or less, you put like a little Bluetooth or GPS chip like on your person, and then you hit a motorcycle, you go surf, you do whatever, and then this thing tracks you and gets all the shots, does some live editing, and more or less makes it to where you hit a button and it goes straight to YouTube.
Well, when I was in New Zealand, and even when I was in London last year, I noticed a lot of people walking around with GoPro cameras on a stick, and the GoPro's facing them. So they're basically, you know, hey, look at me, I'm at this place, you know. There's tons of videos like that out on YouTube, too. So it's just, it's kind of, with GoPros and DJ and drones and becoming, you know, you're right. They have that selfie drone. They have that one. You might remember the name of it. There was one that they were advertising a Kickstarter for, I think, where basically the drone, you take it and you throw it into the air and it flies around and you can like do these sweeping.
Yeah, you can say like chase and it'll chase here. You can say like pano and it'll file around.
You wear this thing on your wrist and it tracks you. I don't know if it works or not, but
there have been a couple out now. That's like the new thing. That's kind of the next biggest thing. So instead of it, there's one that's called like, you know, your own personal cameraman or something like that. So instead of you having to have someone else chase you and get all these immaculate shots or even pilot a drone to get them, it just does it on its own, which is kind of neat.
What a world we live in.
But this also, so the other big thing, I think we mentioned this a while ago, is that the FAA was sending letters or nasty grams or maybe doing some stuff to some people that were posting drone footage on YouTube. Because the issue is you're allowed to fly drones, and we keep calling them drones. You're allowed to fly quadrotors. You're allowed to fly these things under non-commercial purposes. But if you take a video and then that goes to YouTube because YouTube has commercials, that's suddenly a commercial endeavor and you are now flying a commercial vehicle. And for that, it's not just as simple as, you know, doing the license that they're giving out for $5.
Oh, they make it so complicated.
It's one of those I can see sort of two ways on it. You know, if you think about, though, like for real estate photography to take pictures of houses, you're talking about, you know, the space of a yard. And so having a drone or having, you know, a camera mounted on a, you know, quadcopter that goes around and takes some pictures like that, yeah, that's commercial and all, but does that really get to be aviation? Somebody doing that if they were doing that for a living, it seems like a bit of overkill. Of course, the problem is how do you limit what these things can do?
Well,
and
the cinema cameras that are mounted on these quadcopters can be quite large.
Yeah.
You know, you have, they're not, I mean, they're like have six rotors, eight rotors. And
they're eight, giant.
And they do, they could conceivably like wreck someone's car.
They could
kill
someone. Although at that point, there's such an investment in the cameras that I would assume that whoever's operating them has a pretty good vested interest in keeping them. Oh, really? Are they not? Are they just like, oh, $40,000 camera. Let's go.
Well, the drones, those are, I've seen the pricing on those. They're generally expensive, not necessarily because of their size, but because they're mostly carbon fiber. But they're only $8,000 or $9,000 at that size. The ones that can carry big cinema type cameras, you can get them that'll carry DSLRs for much cheaper. Although the little DJI Phantom ones will not.
Surprised, and not to like bring this up, I'm surprised no one's talking like drones and doing the whole call for terrorism kind of things. Because I mean, really, with that kind of thing, why not put stuff you shouldn't be putting on it and fly it somewhere?
Did you see the video?
I'm so gonna get picked up after we get off this radio show.
Did you see the video of the drone where the guy had mounted the Roman candles on it?
Yes. And that's so illegal, I'm sure, but it's so, I want to do that.
It's created a weapon.
I'm not gonna do it.
What is your call sign?
Yeah, we're not gonna. Katie 5, geez.
Oh, now you're impersonating other people.
On the radio, no one can tell.
No, I got that mixed up. Yeah, I pulled that back.
Lordy, lordy. All right.
Well, if you want to see the ultimate of what can be done kind of video-wise with a drone, there's that OK Go video from about, I don't know, 6 or 8 months ago. It's called I Won't Let You Down. And you can see what's sort of possible because apparently it was filmed. Most of the shots in it were done by drone. And they're very innovative, so it's not, you know, it's not stupid, you know, the kind of stuff you can get with that, what the one Barrett was mentioning, where it's the, you know, selfie drone that you throw up in the air and it'll circle around you and stuff like that. So
Hexo Plus, it looks like, is the name of the just one of them out there, but HEXOPLUS.com, and they've got some videos. And they're like, again, there's tons of them. We haven't vetted these guys, but if you want to see what people are doing, it's kind of neat. And this one works from your smartphone, so you just need a smartphone and it tracks everything. So it looks kind of neat.
Magic.
Cool. Well, clearly the drone companies must be doing better because they haven't been bursting into flames like the hoverboards.
Oh, man. Hoverboards. Why are we calling them that?
I don't know. Because they were in Back to the Future 2.
They weren't in Back to the Future 2.
Because
they're trying to be reminiscent of was in Back to the Future 2.
They're like a Segway without a stick.
Did you see the name of the brand name of the one that is currently one of the top sellers?
It looks like Segway, doesn't it?
No, it's Swagway.
Yeah, that's what I mean. That looks like Segway.
Swagway. YOLO.
Especially if you buy one of the cheap knockoffs.
Yeah, anecdotal. I actually have a friend on Facebook that just broke her wrist and wound up in the hospital from having a Swagway accident. So she was also, I think she's my age or older. So maybe, you know, if you're older than 12, don't be bouncing around on concrete on one of those. But yes, hospital.
All right, we should probably work in one more segment before we. Although, do we also need to talk about the?
Oh, we need to do the silent.
We do
need
to do the undrive discussion. That's right. We'll wrap up the first half of the show talking to you about the undrive, where KPFT is raising money for the end of the year, trying to do a little last end of the year push to make up a little financial deficit,
pay the bills.
You know. Get some Christmas presents, buy some cookies for Santa, pay the bills. We're doing this undrive. So if you think about it and you got time and you're so inclined, we're encouraging you to go to kpft.org and make a donation. Any amount that you can, you know, justify this Christmas season, give us a little something. We're asking you to fill our stockings, so to speak. And we do have there. I know there's the raffle that we're offering an opportunity to win a trip to New York to see Amy Goodman, Democracy Now, all expense paid. I don't know if it's at least flight and go to the studio, maybe a hotel night for one night or something. But it's a good deal. And if the tickets are cheap, and if you buy a ticket, you have a chance to win this trip and go to New York and see Democracy Now. An episode of Democracy Now! Being filmed. So that's one of the things we have. There's probably some other things there, but go check it out, kpft.org. We've had a few donations come in the name of Technology Bites, which has been really nice. We appreciate the listeners and fans of this show stepping up during this undrive and helping us be a part of the success as we go towards the end of the year. So if you are tuned in right now and you're thinking, man, I really love Technology Bites, what could I do for them for Christmas? This is what you can do. Go by kpft.org and just make a little donation in our name to say that, hey, like Technology Bites, I appreciate KPFT and all you've done for us or me over the years. And here's something to say thanks. So we'd appreciate that.
If you think about it, you can open up, you know, for the future, if this works, then it shows that there's a way for KPFT to get the kind of listener-sponsored funding that we live off of without having to do the kind of big, you know, involved drives where we cut back on programming. If we can just kind of talk to you a little, you know, talk to you every once in a while and have people call in and pledge, or not call in, but go online and pledge, then that could be the future if that works. And, you know, part of how that works, how you show that works, if you think, hey, that'd be cool, you'd like to do that for the future, then you got to show that it works now by going ahead and going to kpft.org and dropping a little something in the tip jar.
That'd be awesome if you did that. And while you're doing that, you know, you could do it right now as we take our short break at the top of the hour. You won't be missing anything necessarily, at least no Technology Bites, while you run over to the webpage and make that donation. And on that note, we are going to go ahead and take that top of the hour break because the music is playing. You are listening to Technology Bites here, and we appreciate that. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Lee.
And he's
Groovehouse
for the ladies.
Hi, this is Randy Holland from the Norma Centeno Band. Please take the time to go to kpft.org and click Donate Now. Your pledge supports the only station in Houston supporting live local music and playing it on the air. KPFT also plays the best of talk and informational programming where you can get alternative news and views. I hope you'll take the time to make an online pledge at kpft.org or call 713-526-4000 and make your pledge. Thank you for supporting live music and KPFT.
Houston.
Did you know you can find KPFT on the social networking sites Twitter and Facebook? You certainly can, and we'd love you to add us as a friend and get us connected with friends of yours. Join our fan page and check out a special video message from General Manager Dwayne Bradley, as well as keep up with KPFT programmers and staff. Visit facebook.com/KPFT Houston to join us. To follow us, visit twitter.com/KPFT. With both, you can link up with other KPFT listeners, get the latest news about the station, and find lots of extras. It's fun, so catch up with KPFT online. Again, on Twitter, visit twitter.com/KPFT. On Facebook, visit us at facebook.com/KPFT Houston. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, 90.1 KPFT Houston.
You are listening to 90.1 FM, KPFT Houston, and we still have about 15 seconds to kill before we actually can start doing the show again.
Cool, cool.
Because somebody made me play something that wasn't a minute long.
Aw.
So.
All right, well, 4 seconds, 3 seconds.
And go!
This is Technology Bites. We're back! Yes, woo! We are. We were not back before, but we're back now. Groovehouse keeps getting his digs in. You know, Groovehouse, eventually I'm going to have to respond. I'm going to lash out, and I'm just going to overreact and going to go nuclear.
The promo said catch up. And
I didn't hear it. That's all it didn't said. Have to be, you know.
Afflicted said it, too.
Talk to the Gmail invite. All right. Well, welcome back, and my feelers are hurt.
We haven't taken a call in so long that Jay's got to have an outlet for his aggression. I'm just assuming you don't want to be an easy target.
Stay on target.
Do you want me to pretend I've got some spyware? You can help me.
No.
You could reinstall Windows 95 on top of itself on your Mac.
Sweet.
That would be awesome. All right, so
do we have a Barrett time or
we do no. not? Well, we have Barrett and we have time.
We have time.
We have Barrett free time.
Barrett free time.
Barrett free time. All right, well, let's see how this works.
Bite of the apple.
Feels like how radio's supposed to work.
It was like there was a real apple being bit inside my head.
Almost.
Something.
You guys can hear it really clear?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, because the deal is I'm on mix minus, and so what comes from the computer from the one that I dial into is cut out, and so I could hear just a little bit of it. I guess there's a little bleed over, but I was worried that it was playing incredibly softly and not clearly.
It was amazing.
You weren't killing us softly with your
I can add you back in.
I think it's hardwired.
No, there's a button here I can press to add you back in.
Yeah, no, I would prefer not to have that.
I think we probably have a nice feedback loop.
Internal search. So that said, on the Bite of the Apple intro, there's only one story because there's not anything else sort of new. So we're talking about rumors for next year. Ming-Chi Kuo, KGI Securities Analyst, the guy who's behind half the rumors around, has issued a research note obtained by Mac Rumors that predicts that the iPad Air 3 will be released in the first half of 2016, which that's interesting. That if that's true, then he's really, you know, he must have an in somewhere because that's not something, that's not the usual stuff that anybody could predict. And secondly, he says that it's unlikely to adopt 3D touch because of production issues within Apple's supply chain. The iPhone 6S has the force touch thing. Kuo also believes the iPhone 7's pressure-sensitive 3D touch display will have similar technology and structure as the iPhone 6S. The report confirms the iPhone 7 will be released in 2016, likely around the usual September timeframe. So there is rumors of a March 2016 event where there would be a new 4-inch iPhone and the second generation Apple Watch, which I'm sure Apple doesn't like having rumors like that go out as people like decide if they're going to buy somebody an Apple Watch for Christmas. Last time Apple had a March event was in 2015, and they announced the 12-inch Retina MacBook and Apple Watch pricing and release date information. So we'll see what happens. See what happens on those. We'll find out if this guy is if this guy's got a real in, or if he's just making stuff up. So that's all the Apple news. So, you know, obviously, I thought about looking up places where there's deals on iPads, but that's pretty easy to find, and a lot of places just don't have them. And on, I guess the last bit of Apple news is one of the people that I do tech support for, do IT stuff for, is getting an iPad Pro. So I'm going to get my hands on it to set it up for him soon. So I'll have a light hands-on review of the iPad Pro for next week, which is the pre-Christmas show. So right, because that'll be just a couple days before Christmas.
It is. It'll be the 23rd.
Have you been here for Christmas?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was your last year.
So we'll have our – he's heard it, haven't you?
He's heard
the song.
I experienced the song for the first time last year. It was definitely something.
Something to not be able to forget.
It was something. All right.
It's kind of an earworm.
You know, my wife, who doesn't even listen to Technology Bites anymore because she's that smart, she, when it gets close to Christmas time, she goes, "Are you going to play that song? I'm going to tune in for the song." She loves the song.
Well, it's been how many years that we've
it seems played like it in a row? Ago.
And it's still, you know, by not overplaying it, it stays.
I wasn't sold when I heard it the first time.
No, yeah, your reaction was, you just kind of stared at me, and you're like, "Why would we want to play that?" I was like, "It's so funny," and yeah, you were like, "I'm not sure about that."
But I relented. I deferred to your snark, and then you know, when you do have the experience, just tune in next week. You'll know exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah, between now and then, I'll post the Krampus video on the web page again, so that you can see and hear that one. If you haven't gone to the movie. They have nothing to do with each other, but
I was gonna say, is the song in the soundtrack to the movie?
I wish it'd be smart, but I don't think they went there with it. So, well, I guess we should go on to another segment, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's light it up.
In the geek world, we hear about new gadgets and gizmos every day, but can they stand a dip in the snark tank?
I like the cough. That was a nice ad.
I like that. Oh, I like that there are kids in the snark
kids
tank.
In the background.
The children. There's children playing in the snark tank.
The fun part is that I can't hear the bumper play. I can only hear you guys like rustling in your seats, and because of all that, because it's only the sound from your mics. Got a bunch of stuff. No, not, I don't know. Very little of it would be Christmas oriented because it's just not that. There's not that kind of stuff. Some of it's just kind of new things, and I couldn't figure out another place to put it. So I didn't fit under the news, and it didn't fit under science. So this first one is an interesting one. WordPress has changed their basic platform. They announced very recently that WordPress.com is beginning to migrate away from PHP and going to JavaScript and Node.js as a platform. This is a fairly deeper geeky stuff, but it's the second hour, so why not? Node.js is a single-threaded, non-blocking, open-source JavaScript runtime environment. It's also one of the fastest-growing projects on the internet, apparently. It was originally created in 2009. By Ryan Dahl and a team of developers at Joyent, It's powered by Google Chrome's V8 JavaScript runtime and uses non-blocking event-driven input-output system that lets you rapidly create fast, efficient, and scalable applications. I know that sounds like marketing language, but that's what they say. And the deal is, obviously WordPress has been on PHP for a long time. Apparently the advantages they say that they get with Node.js is that it's fast, it's asynchronous, which helps it create very fast IO. Synchronous systems that use blocking are slower because each request must be served in turn. It says Node.js was built around modern computing architectures. It's not hampered by decades-old legacy code. So PHP, I guess, has grown old enough now that the legacy side of it is weighing it down, like Windows did to Microsoft, the older versions. They like JavaScript as a modern language that can be molded and extended in a myriad of ways. Node.js speaks JSON. If you don't know what any of these things are, Google them if you're involved in any kind of web development world. Node speaks JSON, allowing developers to use a single syntax from the web browser through the server to the database. And then the last thing they say is that Node.js makes event loops available on the server. You can quickly write applications to do things like connecting databases to powerful web APIs. So apparently they started this in January of 2014. Matt Mulloway, I guess we could say friend of the show. He's been to Geek Gatherings. Apparently he realized that WordPress had two challenges, which one of them was lack of capital and the other one was the limits of current technology. So if you go to the latest version of WordPress on WordPress.com, the management is all in, it was called Project Calypso. It's entirely driven by open representational state transfer, which you probably heard more is called REST. REST APIs are available to everyone's. The open API means you can manage any of your sites through Calypso. So if you want to try this, if you've got your own self-hosted WordPress site, you have to use Jetpack to do it. You have to use the Jetpack plugin, but it'll let you edit and administer all of your blogs. You can manage pages, posts, themes, menus, plugins, and various settings, and you can write and edit posts apparently quickly.
I've struggled with this a little bit at home. I've got a little test WordPress self-hosted WordPress site that I run, and I installed the Jet. I mean, this is, I guess we're getting kind of a little insidery baseball here, but I installed the Jetpack plugin. You have to have a WordPress.com account because it actually ties back in with WordPress.com, even if you're self-hosted, using the open source version. But it's kind of funky because it's not yet at a state where you could, if you're self-hosting WordPress, you can't ditch PHP and just use Node. It's not at that level yet.
Right. But the front end, all the public facing side of it is PHP.
Yeah, it's still dynamic PHP. It's not running on Node, but they do have you can use their I forget the name of it, but they have an app that you can run now that ties in with Jetpack, or you can do stuff from WordPress.com and do blog management there. I don't know, it's kind of neat because it does live pushes and live updates where clients don't have to refresh the page when you do updates. It's neat. It's not I don't know, it's kind of funky. I have issues with Node and Ruby and a lot of these other more modern sort of DevOps focused languages and development environment, because they tend to be, speaking as someone who is more of an ops and a lot less of a dev, they tend to be very sysadmin hostile when you try to deploy them in a system-wide fashion. Node and Ruby both are huge, horrible offenders, Ruby especially. But even with Node, you end up with having to install a bunch of garbage in your home directory often to make Node applications work, unless you do things a very certain way. So I don't know. On one hand, PHP gets a bad rap because a lot of people say it's a horrible language. You should never do anything in PHP. It's terrible. But
it allows you to write bad code.
There's a lot
of bad developers out there. So
But from an ops perspective, if I'm standing up a web server and I want to throw an Nginx with a PHP FPM stack on it, it is very easy to configure that and configure it fast and securely. If I'm going to install and run a Node application, it's like extremely screwy, and it's generally going to be different with each web application. Each application is going to have its own set of node dependencies, which you have to capture and package separately. Sometimes they'll want different node versions installed concurrently. And I guess the way around that is to go with containerization. But containerization is another like horrible dumb hack that is in response to the fact that DevOps is so often an administration.
When was the last time
thing you
coded with Node? Like what was the last version?
I don't write anything, but I run
When was the last time you installed Node, rather, like on a production?
I don't know, last week?
Oh, wow. Okay.
I mean, I run the blog that my personal blog, which you can read if you are really in the mood for reading a bunch of boring tech stuff, at blog.bigdinosaur.org. That's my personal site. Runs Ghost. Ghost is a Node.js-based application. I actually run two instances of it, so I maintain two of those, and then there's something else I run that uses Node. I mean, so I use it regularly. I
find it pretty easy as far as, like, we've got a couple of Node applications, and if you're dealing on any kind of a system that's got a package manager, so you don't have to go do that. And then maybe you run, like, an NPM, or you run something else that manages the packages that Node needs, so you don't have to do that yourself. It's pretty easy, because the idea is, instead of, you know, having a web server and then having to have, you know, mod PHP and all this other stuff that plugs into it, in three lines of code, you can bring up a web server in Node. And then that's your entire application.
But you would never use the Node web server in any kind of production role. You'd want to have something that actually is good at serving static assets as your web server.
I'm not arguing for it. Again, we're a PHP shop, and, you know, we're not going to get rid of that anytime soon. But if you just want to whip together an application really quickly and have it do something, you know, internal use, hobbyist use, whatever, it's very, very quick.
It is. If you want to full stack yourself and you are able to do it, you don't want to screw with a lot of other things, you can. Where it just gets really annoyingly complicated is if you have a large monolithic production web server and, say, three Node applications written by three different developers, and maybe one guy really, really likes Node, you know, 10.11, and somebody else is using the current version, or they both use the uglified.js plugin, but they have different version requirements, and you have to have a separate Node install for each app. Anyway, we're going way off into the weeds.
But you can do the exact same thing with PHP and different, you know, libraries and different, you know, dependencies, and maybe someone wants to, you know, if you ever tried to run Pear, you know the pain that is Pear, that Symfony is now replaced. But I'm just saying it's every development language with large projects.
That's why you should use Java, because Java doesn't have any of those problems.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. we're mainly writing VB4 scripts now. That's our forte.
That hurts my heart.
I
think it's time to have Matt back on the show.
There you go. Well,
that's no good that they're making you run Node and PHP and, you know, a web server. They need to just go ahead.
They're running Node.
Yeah, you don't have to run Node. That's kind of the funky thing about this is, like, maybe at some point they'll transition the whole code base over. But for now, you install the Jetpack plugin, which makes everything hook up with WordPress.com. And then you run the Calypso application instead of logging into the WP admin. So if you are self-hosting, you go to WP admin. But if you're using this, you can still use WP admin. It's still there. Or you can fire up the app, which hooks up with their servers, and the Node magic is running on there. Like Pete was saying, the Node stuff's running on theirs for now, until they refactor the whole code base and port everything over into Node, which would be a nightmare. I haven't seen the WordPress code base. I've never looked, but I've got to imagine it's complicated.
Well, yeah, if anybody's made a WordPress theme or tried to tailor one, I have to wonder how the...
Oh yeah, I think I was going to try to do that once. I had like a weekend and I was like, I want to put something nice on my little test WordPress site. How do I make a WordPress theme? Do I just do some CSS? And it's like, no, you basically have to become a PHP developer to make a theme.
Yeah, yeah. There's about 400,000 lines of code in there. They've had about 32,000 commits. It's a big mess.
I hope they've got somebody really keeping tight control over
it. A little over 50% of it's PHP, 30% of it's JavaScript, and the rest is CSS and other.
The thing that's very interesting with this is WordPress is really, you know, they talk about it, but they don't point out how large it is as an issue. But they're really changing from being a blog company, blog software company, to being an actual CMS. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people used them for that, but it really you know, I don't know, but perhaps I'm biased because I like write my own CMSs and I use lots of different ones, but it seems like a lot of the blog overhead and a lot of the things that they claim are, you know, to make it easy for content management are really in the past, you know, now they're making a different focus, but it was really kind of dumbed down because anybody can build a CMS that puts the same stuff on every freaking page. That's not a real, that's not a high quality or high intelligence application. And so the kind of having basically the people hacking the static page version of WordPress to turn it into a content management system was kind of a stretch, you know, I guess because they like to be able to install the plugins that do stuff. But the thing I always found, it always turned into where you're either hacking the plugin or nobody wrote a plugin that did what you needed. So then you're kind of, you're carrying all the overhead of WordPress and you're doing all the pain to make a theme for it and not getting a lot of benefit. But so they are, clearly their focus is on trying to keep their blog business, keep the people they already have, and add more by making their content management system work better. And I guess going to a more restful approach is part of their plan. But it will be interesting to see how they make that, how, you know, they have a legacy code issue themselves, and changing the admin thing and making it where it works remotely, as long as you don't hear that there's been some kind of massive security hole, because if by going to WordPress.com you can go and manage any WordPress install that's using Jetpack, I hope they haven't made any mistakes.
No, I seem to remember the process, because I did this like 2 or 3 weeks ago, just screwing around one weekend. The process is you have to register a WordPress.com account, even if you are entirely self-hosting, and then you input your WordPress.com credentials into the Jetpack plugin, and it does whatever linking up that way using only your Word. Like, the only thing that's exposed is your WordPress.com credentials. And everything else, I think, happens either encrypted or they do some kind of tokenization or something. But at no point did I have to grant, like, anybody any kind of – I didn't have to delegate any authority to WordPress.com over my self-hosted site.
Okay.
Whatever. I mean, like I said, we're getting pretty far off into the weeds. But I don't know. This is fascinating stuff. I am a huge advocate of people doing self-hosting, whether it's for a blog or for – you know, a web application that you're doing, or a forum site, or anything, or just a personal homepage. I think anybody with the opportunity to do any kind of self-hosting should do it. And I've written a couple of big, long series on Ars Technica about, like, how to do self-hosting and how to do it in a secure way. And if you have the opportunity, you absolutely should, as long as you're mindful of the security implications of it. But it's an amazing learning process. And you get a lot more of a, and Pete, you know this, of course, you just get more of a feeling for all of the craziness that goes into the kind of the layer cake of services that sit behind any given website. It's great. Anybody who has the opportunity should do it.
Very well said. In other, I guess, try buy or fry type news, I have a feeling more people are going to be trying Node.js as it goes along. It seems Walmart is apparently moving to it on their mobile, and LinkedIn is putting services on it, and there are others. So it, at the very least, it is starting to have a groundswell, so it'll be interesting to watch where that goes. You know, this week is Star Wars week. You know, yeah, it's the week before Christmas, but it's also the Force Awakens week coming very soon. And the initial spoiler-free reviews, at least I've been so far, the ones I've seen have been very good about keeping spoilers out. They seem to be saying that it's a good movie, maybe not a great movie, but a good movie. And I don't know, that's probably enough to ask for compared to some of the prior efforts. But this next item is something that might help you to enjoy The Force Awakens even better, even more. It's a lightsaber flask. So that way when you go to see Star Wars and you've got your costume, even if it's a really lame costume, you can bring in a bit of the good stuff with you. And who's gonna search? Are they gonna really go through and look real close at your
Now they are.
At your replica lightsaber. It is an alternative, and even more covert alternative to the Han Solo blaster flask that was a few months ago. You have to search. I don't know where you can find them, but
I don't think they're making them yet. Yeah,
it is being teased, and frankly, if you're crafty enough to make your own costume, then maybe you can figure out a way to make your own lightsaber flask, just so that you can bring that to the Force Awakens. So that way, you don't have to get loaded before you go into the theater, or you have to go to one of those theaters that will serve you liquor, which fortunately there are more of those than there used to be.
I hope I don't need to drink after seeing the new Star Wars.
or in the middle of it where you go, God, I have to have a drink now. if you pick the right theaters, I guess you can put it on your little card or whatever and somebody will bring you something. But in other new stuff, this one's interesting. Hyundai is teasing their first all-electric vehicle called the IONIQ, I-O-N-I-Q. And the thing that's, you know, first off, Hyundai's done pretty well with their hybrids, but the thing that makes this one kind of stand out is when they release it, and it'll all be at the same time, it's going to have full electric, gasoline electric, and plug-in hybrid as options on the car day one. And apparently, you know, everybody else has done kind of, they've done two of the three. Everybody's done, obviously there's plenty of vehicles that do one of those three things. Some of them have done two, you know, like the Chevy Volt obviously is kind of a plug-in hybrid type thing. But this is the first one that it'll be the same car. So it'll be an interesting comparison to see how the performance is between the three different versions of it. But so far, no pricing. And like I said, they're teasing it. So it'll probably be next month when there'll be pictures where you can get a better, more than just a like rendered view of it, and get some pictures. But it looks like it might be worth a try. And then here's a couple of survival-y type things in case your Christmas holiday goes bad and you feel like it's the zombie apocalypse. This is what was out there to be found. There's no theme behind the try, buy, or fry. This one's kind of cool. It is not inexpensive. The Black Ember Modular Backpack. The thing that's cool about it is instead of getting a bunch of different bags, you know, separate different bags to do different tasks, the Black Ember Backpack has a modular design. So that you can add, you start with the base bag that's 15 to 25 liters, and then they have a unique MagLock hardware system that lets you add additional cases and pouches on an as-needed basis. They also don't look, you know, they're rugged with waterproof nylon exteriors, aluminum hardware, and weatherproof zippers, but they don't look military. You know what I mean? So if you're surviving, if you're doing survival-y type stuff with it, they don't have that like paramilitary, you know, they don't have the strap system that the army uses and police use.
The web gear, web stuff?
Yeah, the one, and there's a name for it and I'm totally blanking on it, but Molly... I'll remember it sometime when it doesn't matter. But you know, there's that webbing thing that they use to add packs and stuff onto their.
It's
their
Molly, M-O-L-L-E.
The Molly web.
Okay, so yeah, Molly web. So this uses a much sturdier, metal and magnetic locking system to put the packs on. So you're not going to get to wherever it is that you're trying to go with your stuff and find that one of the packs has not made the trip with you. that would be unfortunate. It is not cheap. It's over a couple hundred bucks, and I don't know how much they get you for the extra packs, but it does look cool, and if you're in the market for something along those lines, it might be worth a shot, especially if it does the things you want it to do. And then the last one for this time, this one's a Kickstarter, and I linked to their Kickstarter, but it's a clever idea. It's called the Jackfish. It's a it's a card holder that'll hold like four business or credit cards in it. On the one side, it's metal, and then on the back side of it, it holds like kind of essential everyday carry type survival tools. It's not, you know, obviously you wouldn't take this thing. You know, it's about the size of a cell phone. It's not the kind of thing that you're going to like take that and like go live out in the wilderness off of it, you know, for a week. But as far as having like the little things, easy to carry, small items that you know that you could find yourself in a situation where you would want to have them on hand, and if they aren't easy to carry, you won't have them, then it makes sense. It's got a knife. It's got a pen. It basically, the cool part is the case thing. It's essentially looks like a cell phone case, except there's holes and slots routed out of it that fit the accessories in it. And so it's got a Kingston flash card in it. It's got a micro screwdriver, a flathead, and a Phillips head, a hex bit, and a titanium coated hex bit, titanium coated flathead, standard hex bit. Like I said, a Kingston micro SD card reader. Oh, a card reader. They don't give you the card, but it gives you the reader so you can put a card in and carry copies of your documents. It's got a utility telescopic pen. So that's the everyday tool. So you get a pen, you get these screwdrivers. And then on the survival side, it's got an aluminum whistle, a glass vial that holds 10 drops of liquid. I don't know. I guess that's they say it's for iodine, but they ship it empty.
You could put poison in it.
There you go. So, and have that in your case. A windproof match burns for 5 seconds in the harshest of wind, including a striker. A fire steel, so you can light a fire when everything else is wet. A Spyderco bug knife. And no, that's not like a knife that's small for you to go stab bugs with. It's basically a very small, you know, when it's folded up, it's about 2 inches long, 3 inches long. Then the blade unfolds out from it. And then a liquid-filled button compass. And so the whole thing, like I said, it's about the size of a cell phone. And so it's a nice case. It's got a slot for all those things that I listed. And so you can carry all your stuff around. And it could act as a wallet. You can carry, you know, 4 credit cards in it. And they're Kickstartering right now. So all the really cheap backing things where you would get an aluminum one, those are all gone. But for people who like to have very minimalist everyday carry, this might be something that you could enjoy. Plus, you can throw it at people. You know, the last defense is you can throw the thing, and it looks like it's a pretty good chunk of metal, so you can just wing it so that last zombie right in the head, and you're all set.
Nice.
So, and the last thing, I guess, is not so much try as like imagine ahead, since we have some time. You know, the there's a lot of talk, you know, about, oh, the self-driving car and all that. But this is one of the first articles that I've seen that really starts talking about what are the benefits, what's going to really happen if we go to self-driving cars. And it's an article in Gizmodo, and they have 7 ways cities will get better when driverless cars hit the streets. So I figured we'd go through some of those and see what people think. You know, it says pedestrians and cyclists are safer. You know, I think that kind of goes hopefully that goes without saying. If they're not, then you've got a real problem with your self-driving car. Although I hate when you read articles or you hear discussions, they keep trying to turn it into this some kind of like evil AI concept where how will the car decide if it has to choose between something that could harm the occupants of the car and, say, people on the side of the road?
It's the moral dilemma.
And it's like, yeah, because no idiot who's drunk staggering out of a bar into his car faces any kind of moral dilemmas today. So, you know, self-driving cars just won't solve any of that kind of problem. Yeah, it just seems to me like if that's the worst problem people can come up with, then there's not a lot of that. That's not a great obstacle to self-driving cars, from my opinion.
Who's liable? Like if you were in your self-driving car going to work and your self-driving car hit somebody, like who would be liable? Would you be, or the car company, or everybody?
I think they're still working that out. The idea would, you know, it should be, you know, presumably when you drive your car, you know, you have insurance for your own personal car because you're with you operating it. I would think that if it's a fully self-driving thing and it's self-driving when the accident happens, then they do get into an issue of the company that made the vehicle, do they have a responsibility? Because somebody's going to be liable. It may be that you have to have insurance for it, and if they work as expected, then presumably there'd be no insurance would be cheap.
There would be a new one. It'll be like normal insurance, and it'll be like underinsured, and then there'll be driverless insurance.
That may be something that pushes people towards driverless cars, is if the cost of the vehicle is basically the same and the insurance is dramatically less, there'd be a lot of people. I don't have any problem trusting that at some point they will get to where the self-driving car has enough, you know, power and sensors and all that behind it to be safe. I don't think this is going to be like one of those deals where they go, you know, half-ass it and go, yeah, 90% of the time it works all the time, and, you know, put it out on the streets, because we're getting the beta stuff off Tesla's going pretty well.
Well, in the insurance of the future, which will cover self-driving cars.
Sure.
It also, according to Ars Technica, will cover getting trolled on the internet.
Maybe.
There's a multinational insurance company called Chubb.
That sounds like someone's getting trolled right now.
It could be. But they're going to offer insurance against cyberbullying.
They say another advantage.
I should take that out on, you know, because I've been.
On Groovehouse.
I've been cyberbullied by the cyberbully. And you're kind of dressed like a bully, too, with your. Knit cap and your black t-shirt.
He's like one of the Simpsons characters.
It's really hot here. What was that one's name? The one with the black hat?
The one that
Jimbo.
Jimbo. Jimbo Jones. That's who Groovehouse is reminding me of right now.
Now, see, when he had his hair long,
it's
before,
long again,
then he looked...
by the way. It's getting there. I don't think he's been told to cut it.
You know, you'll know he's fully gotten there when he looks like Nathan Explosion from Death Clock. If you've ever watched Metalocalypse, although he doesn't sing like him. Now, on the self-driving car thing, though, one of the other benefits is deliveries happening when you're actually home, because obviously it would make more sense for self-driving vehicles to deliver stuff at night and to people's homes when they're home, or to businesses in the dark, because nobody has to, you know.
Does it just
really
shoot it out? Shoot it out of the delivery car while you're driving by, or maybe the driverless car has a little driverless remote car that like comes out and flips it onto your porch and then drives back
like a battle bot.
It has a little drone that it launches to take stuff to your, and then kids can hijack the cars and send flaming bags of dog poop to your porch. Another advantage, they say in the Gizmodo article, is there'll be more space for people, because obviously you need fewer lanes. Although if people like have their car drop them off at work and then drive back home, you've just doubled the miles that cars are on the road at a time. You know, so that we can move from Houston. If you look around when you're commuting in Houston, most of the vehicles are one person in their, you know, 18-foot-long Suburban. And now we'll have the new thing of the no person in the 18-foot-long self-driving Suburban out on the road. So I guess we'll see on that one. They say better accessibility for those with disabilities. I guess because One thing, although I think this one, the person may be wrong. They say it'll be easier for the elderly and disabled to get around using autonomous taxis. Well, that's true. Plus, since streets won't need curbs anymore to separate human drivers from walkers, it'll be easier to cross streets. Except the curbs aren't really there to stop cars from going on the curb. I don't think it's mostly to keep like water and junk off the sidewalk, right?
To give a place to collect trash between the traffic lanes and the bicycle lane.
And then their last two are kind of obvious ones. Reduced travel times for all. Obviously, if they're smaller vehicles and if they're coordinating, then you're not going to get the kind of gridlock that you get nowadays with people deciding.
They can all safely go 120 miles an hour. 6 inches from each other.
In these little tiny flimsy pods that just have room for two people. That's so relaxing, sitting here and watch the guardrail whir by 3 inches from my face.
We're all shaking all the time from nervousness.
You just get in and just close your eyes. You pull out your book and just read.
Close your eyes and imagine what is. No, put on your VR helmet so then you could also be nauseous right. at the same time. And then their final thing, which is the like, oh, really? Did you think this one's original? Did you think of it yourself? Cleaner air and greener streets. So, I don't know. I think they had to come up with a number of things that will be better with driverless cars so they could get the kind of clickbait 7 ways cities will get better.
Why would there be cleaner air and greener streets from self-driving cars?
Because they're going to be, because there'll be fewer streets and then.
Why would there be fewer streets?
Because you don't have to have all the parking and you don't have to have as many lanes. You don't have to have as many lanes to cover the same amount of traffic because the cars are smaller.
Cars fold up on themselves.
No, well the deal is you'd get dropped off and not, they wouldn't be there.
They would drive back home.
Well, they just passed those.
But then that doubles the, you already said that, but that doubles the driving.
Not necessarily because if you go to work at one time and the car could go back and get your spouse and drive her to work, you only have one car doing the job of two cars.
But it's on the road just as much. It's still on the road as much as the two cars were on the road.
But while you're in at work, though.
Not if you work strategically located places where it could drop one of you off and then go to the other work. Some kind of self-driving.
It still doesn't seem greener because it's still more miles, which means more pollution.
There was a news story today, though, that said that they've enacted or passing a law that says self-driving cars, if allowed to drive on the road, have to be manned.
What about woman?
Whatever. They have to be occupied. They have to be occupied by a biological intercessor.
Like a cat?
Needs to have a person in there who can make a judgment call.
Make a quick judgment call to actually injure somebody instead of let the self-driving car actually avoid injury to somebody.
Yeah. You had to grab the wheel and stop it from saving everybody.
Why don't you want the future to come and visit us, Flicted? Why are you being so obstinate?
I don't have a problem with it. I just don't think that the way they're describing it, I don't see why it necessarily would be green or anything because the cars are driving more distance, which means more pollution.
But they'll be electric.
Actually,
well, see, but not a self-driving car doesn't mean it's electric.
I think long haul, part of the thing that might happen with the self-driving car is if you get, first off, you can do like car share type stuff. So then instead of having the thing of where you get into your own personal car at your house and drive downtown and then send it back.
Okay, imagine.
Imagine one car that everybody shares.
Imagine the tube system in Futurama, but with cars.
Isn't that what Elon Musk is building?
Is he building the Hyperloop?
Hyperloop?
Hyper Trail?
Yeah, we have a Hyperloop thing in Weird Science when we get to that.
It's going
to
be weird.
Yeah. But car share, though, is a possibility. And so then you pay for just what you use. So it could save you money.
So it's like Uber.
So then you call a car. Yeah, well, Uber is I think part of Uber's model is to look at when self-driving cars come, they just buy a ton of those.
Then they don't even have to pay the people that they're paying now.
Right, right. And so that's why I'm making the new Uber 2, which is it's you have people, it's computers that administer companies like Uber.
You should call it.
So that you can cut the wages of the people who own and work in executive functions.
You should call
at
it
places like
the
Uber.
Electric Uberloo.
That Uber sounds like 2, if you went to go pass water, you would electrocute yourself.
You know, the thing that amazes me, and that's kind of the Uber model, is this idea where, oh, you know, we'll use technology to replace everybody's jobs but ours, and we'll keep getting paid. And you kind of go, you know, I don't think it works that way. If it's easy enough to replace a driver, you at some point get to where you can have an AI that can make decisions about your company, or answer the phone, or do whatever other things that executives
claim
they do.
Some companies would be improved by an AI, or at least
some, companies would be improved by a Commodore 64 doing the running
would
the company.
Be improved by just having an AI.
Yeah, they're short on natural intelligence a little.
Are you looking at something that's distressing you, Lee?
No, I was agreeing with you.
Yeah, okay.
You know, eventually, you know, like online link bait articles will all be written by AI. I'm kidding. Just trying to raise Lee's stress level.
Link bait is ruining society. Click here to find out how.
You won't believe the nine
ways that link bait is killing your job. Oh, so, okay, well, I think we're down to the final,
down to the dregs,
final
the
segment.
Last thing.
Let's get weird.
My calculations are correct. When this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're going to see some serious
science. Dude.
Cool. So now everybody gets to... So now he gets to hear him even clearer than before, and I don't hear him at all.
So that's the trick is after it finishes playing, we all have to be really, really quiet.
Because
Peter will have no clue when it's over.
Actually, there's this thing called a progress bar that's on, like, the player. And so I can tell when the thing ends.
Curses! Foiled again!
Oh,
and it just finished playing, so now we can talk.
We were talking about the Hyperloop, there's a couple things with that right now. There is a pod competition for the Hyperloop, the official SpaceX Hyperloop pod competition.
It's like a pod race.
So there's the and there's this little annoying kid that you have to fit into your pod. He has to beat aliens. No, the deal is that the Hyperloop, obviously there's two pieces to it. One is the kind of track, which is the tube that has air evacuated from it. And then the second piece is the thing that you ride in. And right now the stuff that you've heard where they're building prototypes and that is not a pod. It's just the track and the base. So, you know, it's – I don't want to – belabor the analogy, but it's kind of like as opposed to a train car, you just have the bottom and the wheels because you're just testing how that rolls along the track. Well, they have a very rudimentary, non-enclosed sled thing that goes in the Hyperloop that's going to be in their test track. So what's the best way to handle this? Well, they've got a contest to develop a prototype. And so SpaceX and Elon Musk are not affiliated with any Hyperloop companies and are not developing a commercial Hyperloop themselves. They are interested in accelerating development. And so they have a competition geared towards university students and independent engineering teams to design and build the best Hyperloop pod. To support the competition, SpaceX is constructing a 1-mile test track next to their head.
Oh my gosh! What's happening?
Teams will be able to test their human scale pods during a competition weekend at the track.
Yeah.
I'm assuming there won't be people
at
in
the
them
dog track?
While they. No, the Hyperloop track. The part that makes you wonder is so it says the last line it says on the thing about the competition is break a pod. It's like, really? You want villagers to break when they send it down the track? And closer to home and tied into the competition, something that you can go see for yourself, perhaps, A&M is participating in this. So there's a SpaceX Hyperloop pod design weekend at Texas A&M coming up in January 29th and 30th. They're going to bring in some of the best and brightest engineering minds from around the country and globe to A&M for the design weekend on the 29th and 30th. Their pod designs will be evaluated for the final competition weekend scheduled for summer 2016.
I'm trying to think if I can think up any Hyperloop-related Aggie jokes. Nothing really is coming to mind.
So, you know, obviously that's close by, and there's you know, they're looking for volunteers and stuff to help with things there if you're interested. And I don't, you know, the teams I think that are going to be competing at this weekend are already set, but could be very, if you're into the Hyperloop thing, it could be an interesting weekend and all. So some cool tech, and you can get some insight on the Hyperloop. There's links, like I said, to all this on the geekradio.com website. So it's right on the front page if you want to see more about it. Here's then a couple of weird ones that I found just kind of looking for science stories. Physicists have found new evidence. Yeah, really weird stuff. Physicists have found new evidence for helium rain on Saturn. That it's a phenomenon in which a mixture of liquid hydrogen and helium separates like oil and water, sending droplets of helium deep into the planet's atmosphere. Results show the range of blistering temperatures and crushing pressures at which this takes place. They think that helium rain could also fall on Jupiter, where they didn't expect it, because they finally were able to do experiments where they could demonstrate it. And part of why they thought that this was going on is that Saturn is more than 50% brighter than it ought to be for a normally cooling planet. And one of the ways they account for it is through the behavior of its massive envelope of hydrogen and helium gases. As temperatures and pressures rise in the planet's interior, the gases become liquids. At still deeper levels, the liquid hydrogen becomes electrically conductive or metallic, while the liquid helium remains mixed in. And then once it gets even more extreme, when the threshold of temperatures and pressures goes to even farther, the liquid helium is expected to fall out of the dissolved mixture. According to this theory, the liquid helium forms droplets of rain that fall further towards Saturn's core, unleashing gravitational potential energy that makes Saturn more luminous. Now, that's one of those where you sit back and go, wow, now who came up with the theory of that one?
Somebody that drank a lot of Mountain Dew.
Sounds like somebody was a real, you know, or they were a crazy stoner. Why is Saturn so bright, man? And it's got the rings. And look at your hand. And imagine if there's helium rain coming out.
Sounds like a Prince song, actually.
Metallic electric hydrogen.
No, I think it'd be more of a Bee Gees song.
Helium rain.
Or do we need to get the chocolate rain guy to do it? Helium rain. Except they'd have to sing it real high because it's helium. And then, just in case, if you were rooting for the idea that we're like all living in a giant holographic universe, so far from working with a few lasers and mirrors, physicists at Fermi National Accelerator Laboratory in Batavia, Illinois, have been trying to test the idea from string theory that our universe may be like an enormous hologram. Last week, they reported they had found no evidence to support the holographic principle. But if we are really a hologram, isn't that exactly what they would say? critics say the test, which uses laser interferometers to look for telltale jitters in space-time, was on the wrong track to begin with. The holographic principle springs from the theory of black holes, spherical regions where gravity is so intense that not even light can escape. In theory, a black hole has an amount of disorder or entropy that is proportional to its surface area. As entropy is related to information content, some theorists conjectured that the maximum amount of information in any volume of space and time or space-time may be proportional to its surface area. The universe would then work like a hologram in which a 2D pattern captures a 3D image. The idea could guide string theorists in their quest to meld the theories of gravity and quantum mechanics. In 2009, the Fermilab researchers dreamed up a way to test the idea by looking for an effect called holographic noise. The experiment hasn't found it yet, but the researchers say they'll reconfigure the instruments and try again. Yeah, everybody says the world's a hologram, but nobody tries to be sure. And so Fermilab is trying to find it out. And then on the flip side of the whole stuffing more surveillance into into the spending bills, this one is actually about spending, so there's a real revolution. Apparently, NASA, for the first time since 2011, Congress has fully funded NASA's Commercial Crew Program, keeping open the possibility that the space agency will be able to end its reliance upon Russia for transportation to the International Space Station by the end of 2017. So the final fiscal year 2016 budget bill provides $1.24 billion to the agency for its Commercial Crew Program, which is the exact amount requested by President Obama in his budget proposal. NASA Administrator Charles Bolden has said without the full request, efforts by SpaceX and Boeing to deliver their spacecraft will be further delayed. Earlier iterations of both the House and Senate budget bills had provided hundreds of millions of dollars less for the Commercial Crew side. So that's good. And then in another concession of the White House, the final budget also provides $1.92 billion for Earth science research, which is only $20 million less than the president's original budget request. Although that's below the level sought, it's still slight compared to the initial budget proposals that were cutting a lot more. So, so there's good and bad in it, but it seems likely that this is the budget bill that's going to be passed. So, speaking of budgets, you can go to the KPFT website and undrive our budget.
Good segue.
We're trying to make a little bit of a gap in the end of year budget. And so you know, this isn't just some kind of, hey, let's see if there's a way we can make a little extra money. No, this is more of a, hey, KPFT needs to get the books in balance and get things going, to finish out the year in the right place. And so going to kpft.org, you can donate, support your favorite Technology Bites type show and your favorite station, or even your second or third or 20th favorite station if KPFT is that. So, think about it. It's a good way to pledge. And if this works, like we've said before, if this kind of thing works, we can maybe do away with pledge drives altogether. Although, which is going to happen first? Doing away with pledge drives or having the self-driving car?
Flying cars.
Self-driving pledges? What?
Backpacks.
Self-driving pledge drives.
Self-pledging drives?
The self-pledging. Now, see, the self-pledging wallet, that's what we need to invent. The self-pledging wallet. So right now we need the human pledging to happen. So you can call in and you can go to kpft.org and there'll be a link to go
call
to
kpft.org.
If they don't turn that part of the internet off,
Yes, watch out. All right, well, there's the music that's telling us it's time to get out of here, so we are going to get out of here. Star Wars week. Everybody go see Star Wars.
Woo!
Friday.
Are you going to see Star Wars?
No, I hate people, so I'm going to wait.
Until you can get it on the rent?
You're going to get it on Netflix?
I'll probably end up seeing it next week, maybe sometime. We'll see.
Remember, all the kids are off school next week, so they'll be it. So you get to see it with 412-year-olds.
All right, well, thanks for tuning in to this episode of Technology Bites. Now you're all caught up.
Till next week, at least.
I'm ribbing myself now. I'm a self ribber. All right, this has been Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
For your own pleasure.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Lee.
And he's
your boss.
Yes. Ooh.
KPFT local station board election deadline has been extended to January 4th. If you donated to KPFT any time between August of last year and August of this year, you should have received your ballot in the mail. If you didn't get one, leave a message for the local election supervisor at 713-526-4000, extension 313. We can send you voting instructions by email or by regular mail. Just get your request in before December 23rd. For all your election info, visit the official Pacifica election page, elections.pacifica.org. Scroll to find the KPFT station page where you can meet the candidates, see how they answered listener questions, and hear their 60-second promos. Again, elections.pacifica.org. January 4th, 10:59 p.m. is your deadline to turn in your ballots. Thank you for supporting KPFT Houston.
KPFT is supported in part by Emporium Presents. Emporium Presents hosts on January 7th at the Cullen Performance Hall at University of Houston bluegrass singer-songwriters Dave Rawlings Machine. For tickets and information about Dave Rawlings Machine in concert January 7th, you can visit Ticketmaster.com or the TDECU Stadium Ticket Office.
Welcome to Tell the World on 90.1 KPFT. Thank you for joining us this hour. My name is Brian.
My name is Jason.
And we'll be talking about politics and such.
Politics and such.